From WTIP News, this is the North Shore Weekend News Roundup. I'm Kara Thomas.
I'm Barbara Jean Johnson.
And I'm Jay Anderson, and here are some of the stories we're following this week. Minimum wage workers who receive tips would have that hourly wage cut by more than half if Minnesota adopted tip credit legislation. The issue of dropping the wage floor for servers and bartenders has been floated by two gubernatorial candidates so far. Federal law allows states to drop their minimum wage for tipped employees to $2.13 per hour. Minnesota is only one of seven states prohibiting employers to pay less than the state's minimum wage, which is $5.25 for businesses with an annual gross under $625,000. For larger businesses, the Minnesota minimum is $6.15. Endorsed Republican candidate for Governor Tom Emmer first proposed the tip credit on the 5th of July. Shortly afterwards, Independence Party candidate Tom Horner supported a phased-in version of the idea. DFL candidates Mark Dayton and Matt Intenza have criticized the tip credit. Margaret Anderson Kelleher countered with a proposed across-the-board increase in the state minimum wage. Judy Barsness thinks there's a better way to help small restaurant business rather than reduce their employees' earning power.
We are required to pay taxes on the tips that our servers earn from the guests. The wage that they earn from our customers, we're required to pay payroll taxes on that. Medicare, it increases the size of our payroll, so that impacts the amount of workman's compensation insurance that we have to carry and pay for. It impacts the amount of unemployment compensation that we have to pay. My feeling is if they truly want to help small business owners in the restaurant industry and impact them in a positive way so that they can increase wages or they can provide benefits or they can hire more people and create more jobs, then that is the area where they need to be looking at changing some laws and not in the minimum wage.
According to the Rochester Post Bulletin newspaper, in 2007, Governor Tim Pawlenty vetoed an increase in the state minimum wage because the proposal did not include the tip credit.
There's only one big lake around here, and that's Lake Superior. Native Americans in the region called it Gitche-Gami, meaning big water, and they were right. Lake Superior is the largest freshwater lake in the world and holds one-tenth of the world's fresh water. So it's only fitting that this truly awesome lake should have its very own day, and it does.
We feel that one of the reasons to even have a Lake Superior Day is that if we can connect people to the natural environment, either the waters of the lake itself or the rivers or the streams or the forests, it's more likely that people will feel connected to the lake and appreciate it and want to learn more.
That's Lissa Radke. She's with the Lake Superior Binational Forum. They've been sponsoring Lake Superior Day since 2003. Here on the North Shore, Lake Superior Day activities are planned for Two Harbors, Gooseberry Falls State Park, Split Rock Lighthouse, Oberg Mountain, Sugarloaf Cove, and Grand Marais. Radke is hoping that people across the Lake Superior Basin will find ways to celebrate Lake Superior Day this Sunday.
We really feel that once you get down to the lakeshore and you put your feet in the water or you have a picnic or you fly a kite or you pick up some litter with your family or your friends, chances are you're going to appreciate the lake more and connect more deeply to it. And then that deep connection and appreciation for the very special waters of the world's largest freshwater lake will then lead to a desire to protect the lake from some of the things that are challenging it.
For more information about Lake Superior Day and a listing of events in Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Ontario, visit superiorforum.com.
Cook County Planning and Zoning Officer Tim Nelson returned to the county board with explanations for some fee increases proposed at a previous meeting. Commissioners had questioned the size of some of the environmental health fees and asked for more details. Nelson said in most cases, county service fees are set to cover the expense of staff time. There are, however, some exceptions. An increase from $100 to $300 for septic compliance inspections, Nelson said, was designed to encourage landowners to use the private sector for inspections. Nelson said that the current $100 fee is too low to promote competition. The service is not mandated by the state or county. The county currently charges $70 for a water system sample analysis. The fee proposed is $150. Nelson said test kits for analysis are available to the public, and it does not take planning and zoning personnel to administer the test. The test is not a requirement. Other fee increases in the cost of sewage permits and three other planning permits are all mandated by county ordinance and are being increased to better cover the cost of administration. Public Health and Human Services Director Sue Footerer advised commissioners that a new statewide requirement would slightly lower the hourly rate for chemical dependency outpatient treatment. She also said a new fee had been created for non-licensed daycare provider background checks. In other county business, Veterans Service Officer Richard McKenzie and Soil and Water Conservation District Manager Rebecca Wienanen have submitted their resignations.
It's only July, but Grand Marais City Councilors need to adopt a preliminary budget by their first meeting in September. Once adopted, the budget can be reduced in subsequent meetings, but not increased. City department heads will be submitting budgets through the summer, and they're being cautioned to think flat growth. The reason is tied to local government aid projections from the state.
In 2011, I think the picture remains really, really unclear. What they've told us is we're going to go right back to where we started with local government aid, increased. But I don't believe them, and I don't think you should either. We don't know about wages next year. Our capital improvement schedule is pretty flat, and we have the funding in our budget right now to do the things that we intend to do, but there aren't any big items on that list. And the state's finances continue to be a significant factor to us, but how many things can happen between now and when they need to make those decisions? And all of them happen after you need to really have your budget.
City Administrator Mike Roth's skepticism was shared by Mayor Sue Hakes and fellow councilors. The library has already turned in a 2011 preliminary budget that looks almost identical to 2010. Roth told the council budgeting this year was like a three-legged stool. Councilors will need to balance revenues against the cost of wages and services. Mayor Hakes said the city should plan on zero state aid. She said she'd rather lower salary increases rather than have layoffs and reductions in city services. The city will enter into contract negotiations with their employees later this fall and will have to leave some room to maneuver as they anticipate their revenues and expenses. For WTIP News, I'm Jay Anderson.
I'm Kara Thomas.
And I'm Barbara Jean Johnson.